This is an interview with Dorothy Mork for the Lelano Voices Oral History Project of the Lelano Historical Museum on April 29, 1993, at her home on Setterville Road in Sutton's Bay Township. The interviewer is Rod Johnson.
Came to this country when she was 18, and she worked for Paul Morkspa, a mother and dad. I don't remember their name, until she married my father. And Grandma and Grandpa's Bull came to this country earlier, and they lived in Leland until when they came, Dad was 9 years old, and they lived there 2 years, and then by that time he had just found the farm, and they searched different, where we wanted some kind of level land, and you know, Leland, the county's kind of hilly. And Grandma and Grandpa had a log house, but they moved, they had built by the time my mother and dad were married. And then, I couldn't tell you the date. And they lived there until they were old. I don't remember what year it was they moved to town. But I know my mother was up in her 70s. And then they built a little house in town. And they lived there till my dad dropped dead. Trying to show somebody how to cut down the log, down the tree. And when he got home, he just dropped down dead. He was a lumberman, you know. Hands full. My grandpa was the head of it, was the boss. And I was told this story by Aunt Mary. And Dad, they hired anybody that had two horses, and they were scarce, you know, to get them days, and they lumbered. Their shack was over where the Kiesel farm is. The Jack Kiesel farm is right now.
Okay, that would be on 633 then.
And Aunt Mary was their cook, and that's where she met Uncle Dick. They was there till the trees were gone in that area that they had. But it was quite a large area, you know. And they sold the logs in town. And I don't know. I don't know who was the first man that sold logs in town, except the Petersons. So they struggled and worked together. Boy, When I come along, I'm in the third from the bottom of 14 children. They had gotten pretty well established. They had added on to the house because Grandma and Grandpa had died. And I'll remember the time we were sitting. There used to be a hermit that lived down by Vines that had his home in the ground down there. And he had a calf. And Dad gave him another calf, so he had two of them. And a great big hole. I don't remember, but you remember what the name was? I think it was Rock.
I believe that's correct.
Rock the Hermit. And we all sat around this big long table, there was 14 of us. Of course, you know, we were all home. And he couldn't get over. He sat at the end of the table, my dad sat at the other end. And he looked at all these little faces. And he just shook his head, he couldn't believe it. And I can remember him.
You can remember him.
Oh, yes. He stopped different times. They always feed him. And they say he came from Russia. And now whether the story is true or not, I'm not sure. But he told them, my dad and mother, that he was a teacher in Russia. And he had spanked a kid. The kid died. So, it was capital punishment there. He escaped. And he got to this country. And that was his punishment to himself, that he lived in that hole in the ground.
I see.
And he took his, in the wintertime, the animals lived in there with him.
It's an interesting story, Dorothy. I wonder if we could take...
I thought maybe you'd heard of it.
I have heard of that.
Uh-huh.
And I would like to continue this. Maybe we could just stop for a moment here and we'll check the tape. Dorothy, we've been talking about your family there on the farm and Rock, who was, I understand, considered somewhat of a hermit with his cattle living in his own home there. Would you care to start in again and tell us anything else?
Well, there was a lot of, I think we were, he used to come up every week. In the summertime. Uh-huh. He pastured his cattle along the road, you know. And there was a lot of food along the road. It wasn't road, it was really a trail for a wagon, you know. So there was a lot of grass even in the center of the road. But then they took care of him. Once in a while, Dad would go down and check on him. But also, there was some Indian ladies. They had two sons. They were growing up. But my mother, every February, when it was rather stormy, would send Dad down to check on them, those Indian women, because they were so far to get to a store or anywhere. But then there was one family that came up every year in February, and they go behind the house and dig it. There was a big trench, maybe 3 feet wide, and they lined this big trench with I think they plowed it, big furrows and turned it out, you know. And they would line this great big thing with straw. I can remember having to help them with it. We were just kind of a nuisance. I think we were so little. But they would put potatoes, carrots, cabbage, and anything that, like rutabaga and stuff like that, would get kept. And they'd cover that part up, and then the other part would be all apples. Different. But the earlier ones were on the end, and when they come to the Ben Davis, they were on the center, because they were, they, last all winter long and into the summer. So they just help themselves in these pits. It was a good storage space because we couldn't keep all that stuff in the basement. You know, it would be just to haul it out again if we didn't eat it. This way it was just covered up and it would just rot away in the summertime. But they fed a lot of these people like that. They load up this little sleigh, this Indian camp. And it's the smallest horse I can remember, I think I've ever seen, but it wasn't a it was bigger than a Shetland pony. And I could remember they had a tie from the halter down. It was a tie that they tied him to, you know, something. But that thing would hit the ground and that horse wouldn't move an inch. And I never seen an animal do that before. I can remember Norman was so tiny. Chris couldn't leave that rope alone. He just wanted to go and see if the horse would move. But they just told my dad, that's enough. And he never dared touch it. It was law. When you stop and think, there was 14 of us. I can never remember getting a spanking, but that voice was all we needed. Yeah, it was kind of, when you stop to think, it was kind of fun, big family. But other than Joe Oliver, the one that they got the farm, bought the farm from. And the only thing I could remember was that he had gotten a grant from the government. There was quite a lot of like farms that was sold from them, that he sold. So I think it must have been, you know, he must have been given this land because there was a lot of farmers that would bought land from him. And I used to have to carry lunch down to the So the men way in the 80. It was quite a ways from the house. And I don't know why they sent us, because in 2 hours they'd have been home anyway. But you know, we had to carry, I think a lot of times we were so small, maybe got there with the time they were supposed to go home. But that was our duty. We had, and I was short, small. And that basket, I know it must have dragged on the floor, on the ground. Norman was supposed to help me. He would get lost. Joe Oliver's had a grandson down there named Norman. And as soon as we hit that little cabin, Norman would get lost. At the other Norman, they'd go to the woods and play. There was a creek down there, and I was supposed to play at the creek. And I'd have to finish carrying the lunch to the men.
Was this Joe Oliver a Native American?
Oh, yes. Uh-huh. It was real old. Because I can remember going carrying, I was, I think, 7, about that age. And I come from Dooley's and went over home, and it would give me the privilege I could go down and carry lunch to Joe Oliver's. Because he was sick. And he died shortly after that. I can remember going into this. She opened the door. Of course, she couldn't talk English, but she motioned me to come in, and I went in. And he motioned, little cabin, there was a fireplace in one end, and he had his bed in another place. Everything was so neat and clean in there. And he would kind of try to talk to me. And of course, I had blonde curly hair, and he took me over to the bed so I could see him. And he put his hand in my head, and he said something to her. And she kind of looked at my hair, and she nodded her head. And whatever it was he said, I don't know, but maybe because it was so bright yellow, I'm Scandinavian, so you know I would have blonde hair. So, but I've seen him, not shortly before he died. That was, they seemed to, well, when she got to be alone, I can remember my dad going down there. But, maybe he went to Shabbytown for her so that they could take care of everything down there. Because she disappeared too after that. I imagine that's where she lived, went down there and stayed. I think she had some children. I don't know. I can remember one girl they call Marion. Mary Ann. And that's really all I know about her.
Do you recall any other Native American families that lived close by?
No, just the Deans. And the those women. And the two boys, their oldest boy, we had so much snow, we had a flood one spring. And I was little. And the oldest one, Ignatius, carried me across the just pond, water. It was so scared that I was going to get my feet wet. So, but the other, I don't know how the rest of the kids got over. Maybe they were older. I was the first year in school. Maybe walked the fence. It was up the way by the fence, the first row of the fence, of the barbed wire fence. So it was deep, and I suppose it wasn't too deep for me to walk.
Was that in the spring of the year?
Oh, yeah, it was spring of the year, flood. My dad and my father-in-law, Otto Mort, and Albert Nelson all had they had big families. And there'd be maybe five or six in the family that was growing up, 14 years and up. And they never had any schooling. So my dad, he had been to Leland, and he had some schooling in Norway because he was nine. So they got together and decided they had to do something with the kids. It was too far to go to South Spain. And a lot of woods at the time. So they got their money, and of course there's a lot of logs around here. And they built that little sunshine school. And then when they got so many kids in there, they had to build a bigger one, so they built a double school. A lot bigger building, but they put a partition right down the center. And the only way you could get from one to the other is up by the teacher's desk. There was a little door. And they had outdoor toilets. They had to pump the water. And they had some kind of a stove in the basement because they put big stove in later, kind of like a furnace that would heat the two rooms. But I don't know if that would be like some of these they had yet in this country now. I just haven't got any idea. But I know that was a big register, because we would carry our lunch. I was for the little kids. My mother would always say, now don't eat that food if it's so cold. So we put it on the side of the register. So once in a while we had two hot sandwiches. But we ate anyway. But I stayed there till I was able to walk to town from Julie's. They said it was 2.5 miles, but that would be from Uncle Dan's.
I see.
So it wasn't, maybe it was 2.25 miles, something like that.
Uh-huh.
And we when you're only 7, 8 years old, I couldn't go through the snow drifts. I was too tiny. So when I went over to Julie's to live, when I got old enough so I could walk to town, then I wasn't much better in the walking because I had a big track spin too, you know.
So could you tell us how much schooling you had then?
Well, I went there till I was in the 10th grade. I finished that. I was going into the 11th grade when Julie got sick, and I had to stay with her. She had an appendicitis operation, and you know, they didn't make little incisions them days. I think that thing must have been 6-7 inches long. And she never wanted to heal. So I had to clean that and drain it every morning. And that was kind of hard for a 15-year-old kid, that girl to do. And I did that till after Christmas, then I just balked. I couldn't do it anymore. So an Aunt Mary would come up a couple times a week and take care of it. But she was laid off so long that I never went back to school. You don't think she could bother. As far as all the young boys, there was nobody that really young went on to school. And he else did. I don't know where he went, but I think it was Ferris Institute for a while.
I see.
That kind of names kind of registers. And he was a banker in Braun for a while. Then the banks went busted. Then it went during the Depression. He just quit, went to Detroit. He was an electrician before.
I see.
And Louis got to be a cabinet mate. After when he come home from the service, he remarried, or he married, he had two of my teachers. And he had two children, and his first wife died of a brain tumor. Then 3 or 4 years later, he remarried. Girls. You know, his oldest son and only son lives in Empire.
Oh, he does?
Jerry Solem, he's a contractor.
Okay.
And you see, it runs in the family. That the lumber.
I believe you're right.
Yeah. And, Jerry's sister is moving up there now. Josie, my oldest sister, lives in Empire. Or she's, until she died. And now her two sons live there. John and James. John has a park. And he has got a lot of trailers. Stay there, period, all the time.
And that would be the Dorsey family,
yeah,
then?
Uh-huh. And, of course, Ida died. And but they had, well, had Helen Downer is still the one of that family that's left.
Dorothy. We're starting on our second session here this morning, and I'd like to start off our questioning with a question about your first home, where you grew up. What might you know about the building of your Grandpa Solem's first home?
Well, it was, when I was, what I can remember of it, it was wasn't it small? The dining room, it was dining room with it, and it was 2 bedrooms, a a bedroom on the end, and the bedroom in the back. That's where Grandma and Grandpa lived. But of course, they were gone when I was born, because I was the tail end of that bunch. I and Helma and Norman. And they was a big dining room, and then it was a big living room, kind of a square building. And then it was part of that made into a... That was the main, at that time, I don't know why they had to have an extra living room that they only had, I guess, when people died, because they never used it. But that's where Grandma and Grandpa had their, took that part. Then there was a hallway here, and a hallway upstairs. There was two ways of getting upstairs. And there was a... And on the end of that, their big long building, there was a bedroom that I remember, but they said it had once been the kitchen. But when they added on the new kitchen, I was 4 years old when they, I could remember that so well. And I, because they, my mother, she had company. You know, we played horse that way.
I see.
And she pulled a jerk, and she was bigger than I was. She was 4 years older than I. And she broke my shoulder blade. She pulled it so tight.
Yeah.
And that I can remember because it hurt.
I bet it did.
And then at, and then there was this here addition out of the kitchen. That's a big one. No, we didn't go quite that far. And then it was back here, on the back end, it was a long room that my mother used for a pantry. And then in the center, there was another room that was used for wood. And we had to pile that full of wood every weekend so that there would be enough to keep the house, that part of the house warm. There was, I don't know when they ever put the furnace in the main building.
Was that a wood burning furnace then too?
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
And they had that, that was before my days. But then it was moved, but then they had carbide lights. Did you ever see them?
Well, can you tell us anything about those?
They give a very good light. But the big thing stood in that, under the, in the basement. The whole thing was a basement. You see, they thought ahead. And this here carbide plant was down in the corner. As you go in from one, from the new part of the house, to the, you had to go down the step, and then into this big door. Heavy door, and then we had, it was a carbide plant, and Dad had scared us so when we just flew by that thing when we had to go down to get potatoes or carrots or something.
Uh-huh.
And I suppose was the idea was that, you know, we might touch it because there were so many of us.
That's really interesting. Was that somehow?
And that was there when I was a baby, a little.
No,
you
that
see,
was
they progressed. And the only other house in the neighborhood that had one like that was on the Albert M. Nelson farm. They thought that was quite an idea, you know, get good light.
Okay, so did this provide like a gas that would go through some piping through the house somewhere?
Yeah, it must have been because all we had to do was take a match and turn on some of the things. By where Dad's chair was, I can remember that because we used to like to sit there and read.
That's really something. I don't think many people recall that kind of lighting.
Mm-mm.
At least I don't.
And but that's the only one I know of. But the Albert Nelson farm had one too. And of course, there were neighbors, you know.
Right.
And then in the end of that, on the other part of that house there, there was a washroom. And in this one, there was a bathroom. Kind of a bathroom. But they had water at that time in the bathroom when I was a little. So you see how I always figured there must have been somebody that had money, little money there. And maybe because they had what most people didn't have.
Are you saying they had faucets with running water there?
Yes. I can never remember when they didn't have running water. But they had a big